Today we're asking our experts on the panel, can skilled foreigners still get a work visa, or is that now a thing of the past? And it's a great pleasure to welcome in studio Ralph Oertner, CEO of InterSA Group. Ralph, I'm so sorry you had to suffer the ignominy of traffic for 3.5 hours. Was it 2.5 hours? I mean, let's put it this way. I can't wait till we're in our new studios at Melrose
Arch.
Shave at least 45 minutes off that for you. On the phone tonight, we've got Michael Yates, Head of Immigration at Cliff Dekker Hofmeyr. Michael, welcome.
Hi, thank you very much, Michael. Thank you for having me.
And Lino De Ponte, Director, Tax and Legal at Deloitte and Tush's Johannesburg office. Lino, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, Michael, just kick us off here. We had the scarce skills list published by the Department of Higher Education in January after quite a long wait. And it's clear that the country is short of the big skills here, your engineers, doctors, professionals mostly, but also a whole range of artisanal skills as well, welders and plumbers. And it's really a cross-cutting skills crisis. But I think for tonight's purposes, we'll mostly be referring to some of the high-end skills that one imports at the professional end. Well, what sort of demand are you seeing from the companies that you advise here in South Africa and some of the multinationals?
Well, Michael, firstly, let me kick off by saying that in our opinion, the scarce skills which has been published in the Government Gazette is relatively well considered. It generally does cover a broad range of skills which we would agree would cover quite a demand that we experience in our field. Particularly engineers and foreign language speakers, but something that is missing off the list, which I find kind of strange, would be professions or vocations such as teachers, math teachers, science teachers, and so on. So even from a ground level up, it's a little bit strange why those vocations have been left out. But from a higher and an upper end skill development point of view, The Scarce Skills Act list actually does provide for some welcomed relief.
Ralph, would you go along with that?
No, absolutely. I totally agree. I was also the missing of, if you look at the WEF's World Competitiveness Report and you look where South Africa is ranking as far as the educational standards in maths, science, physics, etc. is concerned, there's clearly a lack. There's clearly something, I think we're number 140, the last one, red light in the hand. So here there was a possibility to do something. So I completely agree with them on that. And also on the point of, even though they mentioned the foreign language speakers, they're reserved for the BPOs or call centers, if you call it, in order to later on, qualify for critical skills, which is a little bit limited in bridging, especially, with the larger multinationals coming here, involved in large projects like the Spanish and the French, hardly ever speaking English, and having to bring these people down, but can't because they're not a call center, a little bit short-sighted.
Yeah, a little bit short-sighted. I was having the conversation with Roy Douglas of Advertech earlier. Their capacity is a big issue because there's such a demand for private education in the country. They're certainly investing enough in the physical brick and mortar structures, but it is on the skill side of whether or not they're going to be able to supply enough qualified teachers that they're in that side of the market that obviously attract those sorts of skills with their salaries. They're not too concerned, but there's clearly a need in the public sector as well. Lino, let's look at the three types of work visas that we offer. Talk in a bit of detail now about some of these issues, and let's start with the intra-company transfer work visa, because secondment of skilled artisans from an international company to a South African branch or subsidiary probably seems like the easiest way to provide a building site, for example, with skills. What are the limitations here?
Well, for the construction industry, the problem you have is that most of the skills are labor-broked into the business, so people move from project to project. So for a construction project, you wouldn't actually be able to use the intra-company transfer. You've got to remember, by design, the intra-company transfer wasn't designed for the large-scale project. There's a fourth visa class, the corporate permit. It's actually designed for that. The intra-company is for a company like Deloitte that moves people across the world. So you're big multinationals. That's actually the class that was created for the big multinationals to maintain the investments in the country. Your construction industry would probably use the critical skills or the corporate visa rather than the intercompany transfer.
Ralph, what do you think of the intercompany transfer work visa?
It might have been the intention, but I mean, from our practice over the last 20 years, we have applied the intercompany transfer work visa earlier on, the permit under the old law, in plenty of cases of in the construction sector, all across the board, small, medium enterprises, large enterprises. Now with a little bit of more restriction that you can't source anymore and abuse it from outside and quickly hire and send down, so the people have to have been employed for 6 months before you send them down. But still, it is a kind of a, even though it's short-lived for only 4 years and it doesn't contribute to any permanent residence later, it's one of the most cost-effective and fastest visas in order to get people on site, including construction sites.
Well, very interesting that. Michael, would you tend to go along with the way the intercompany transfer work visa has provided a cost-effective means of moving employees into the country?
Absolutely. By comparing the three work visas out there, the intercompany is the easiest to go for. But it must be stressed that companies have to qualify under certain strict criteria. You have to be a branch or a subsidiary or an affiliated company. Many companies make the mistake of relying on a service level agreement between themselves and a client and trying to apply for a intercompany transfer visa, and unfortunately those kind of applications are scrutinized. So you can't necessarily rely on that. The act is quite clear. It has to be a branch, subsidiary, or an affiliated relationship.
So if you're a French multinational without a subsidiary in South Africa, but perhaps wanting to build a nuclear power station, for example, you wouldn't be able to use this one. Let's move over into...
But you would actually, because what you can remember from a tax law perspective, you'd be quite foolish to have 1,000 staff running around South Africa without at least a branch to be able to pay and claim that. So in practice, it's
actually
not an issue.
They would open a branch. There we go. Okay.
It's not an issue.
Let's move over to our second visa then. That's the critical skills work visa. And, Ralph, in previous years, it was the exceptional skills work permit and the quota work permit available for those who offered skills that were amongst the rarest in the country. In the new legislation, they seem to have both been abolished. So where do those skills now sit within the framework?
The new critical skills work visa, even though it sounds like almost similar like the exceptional skills visa, it's actually more similar to the quota work permit that we used to have, that used to identify the shortness of skills, assign a certain number of vacancies that South Africa would like to fill, and as long as the quota was not exhausted, you could apply under that. Now, the exceptional skill was based on a mix between experience, accolades and educational backgrounds in order to show certain higher educational levels in order to bring them down. Now, these have been replaced by critical skills, and based on the list that are published by the Minister of the Shortage Occupations, you'll find yourself very familiar territory is what we discussed earlier, scarce skills, the old quotas, on what is needed in South Africa. You qualify under them. You have to register with a local professional body, which is, sometimes not the easiest, and also they sometimes don't want to have the foreigners registering. You got your SACWA, and in a fairly reasonable way of effort, you get for 5 years with a chance for permanent residence, a valid work visa that lets you stay here by pure merits of your skill and not being really linked to an employer or an employment contract.
Very interesting a point that. Lino, this seems to be probably one of the more advantageous of the visas.
Well, that's the major change, is that we actually got security now. So if we are helping clients recruit around the world, you can actually make people an offer and say, well, you're pretty much 90% secure to get the visa, which was a major thing to be pushed for years with the various ministers. Because what you really need when you're attracting skills is security. When you make that offer, the person can actually leave his home country to come to South Africa knowing that he's going to get the work visa.
Provided he can register with the professional body, which, Ralph, I think you alluded to earlier, it sounds like that might be tricky.
No, as you've got sometimes, there need to be SACWA, South African Qualification Authority, accredited. And not for every critical skill that's listed in the minister's notice is really a body for it that fits it like a glove. So you come sometimes, over the odd things, especially when you go around the world as fitters, turn us, you know, where to fit them under. They're not really engineers, you know, they're draftsmen. You go to the draftsman council and, you know, EXA doesn't want to hear about them. You know, they also, oh, we're busy, you know, go somewhere else. They don't understand that, unfortunately, it has to be SACWA accredited. And there they have to register. And that best be in a very short period of time, because you don't want to wait for 6 months before the registration is through, because then, you know, the availability of the engineer is pretty much out of the window.
Yeah, well, certainly in a global marketplace where we are competing against other countries with their own pricing infrastructure needs. Michael, there sounds like a room for just a slight improvement in the critical skills work visa around issues like that.
I absolutely agree. I can only but echo the sentiments of my fellow colleagues on the line. We do have some challenges, and I must stress that if you do qualify for a critical skill, it is a reliable and a convenient visa to apply for. It comes with many benefits, added with some frustrations, of course. But if you do not qualify under any of the listed grounds or listed professions, and if you do not qualify for an intercompany, you find yourself in a difficult position, because then you've got no other option but to apply for the general work visa.
And that leads me into the general work visa, Michael, because if someone was neither employed in the mother company to be seconded, as you said, but also doesn't fall under any of these shortlisted shortage occupations, is this the end, or how does the general visa work?
Well, the first point is just to clarify the name of general work visa, because it isn't a work visa which is general in nature. In other words, it doesn't mean that you can work for any employer. It's still employer-specific, and that employer has to test the South African market and prove to the satisfaction of the Department of Labor that it couldn't find a South African or a South African resident with similar or equivalent skills or experience. Mm. And this is where some of the amendments to the labor relations legislation tends to give a bit of frustration, because we saw the introduction of the Employment Services Act, which came into effect on the 6th of August 2015, where the Department of Labor is really acting as an employment service, and they have a database where unemployed South Africans can register their name. And as an employer, you have to test this market, this database, together with private agencies and national newspapers to the satisfaction of the Department of Labor.
So just to get this perfectly straight, the Department of Labor is basically the country's largest labor broker.
Not labor broker, but employment services provider, yes. we're still waiting for the regulations to be published under the Employment Services Act. So even though it is a piece of legislation that is enforced at the moment, the nuts and bolts of it is a little bit unclear to everybody. But the Department of Labor is already requiring employers who wish to employ foreign nationals to test the market by applying or searching the database held by the Department of Labor, and this unfortunately creates some extensive delays.
How does that create a delay? I mean, surely if they've got a database up and running and I'm looking for a chemical engineer, for example, I just go type in the keyword and boom, Ralph, that should come up. In my ideal world, that's the way it should work. How does it work in practice?
Michael, in an ideal world, you know, oh, we wish. So you must see it from a procedural point of view. You have to task labor with issuing a certificate in which they confirm that the skill that is here, you know, basically seeked or applied for, you know, is not available. Now, first of all, when the regulation changed and it was first introduced that the certificates that needed, nobody told labor before that consulted with them. They first had no capacity to deal with that huge influx on the certificates. You know, they're not really motivated, you know, in looking through it. And also, if you look at the database, I mean, besides that, they're coming also and want to inspect the place of work where this person will be. And then comes it to the point, you know, where, you know, let's say any artisan, you know, a welder. And then they say, no, listen, we've got, you know, 2,980 welders on the list. Yeah, but these are maybe class 1, class 2, or 2A, 2B welders. These are not class 8 or class 9 welders. So here comes the person typing in, and the database is not perfect. It says welder in the database. It doesn't say what skills level. And I don't have to tell you, if I weld a water pipe at home, or I go to, you know, Medupi, and have something, and I was like, you know,
Medupi is exactly the example I was thinking of when we had, what was it, 17,000 faulty welds. wells that were discovered on, we were making the world's largest pipe bomb up there in the Waterberg. But I mean, we're joking, but this is all very serious stuff. So, Lino, it sounds to me like there's some serious administrative shortcomings that we're encountering in the process. Some challenges, shall I say.
Let me put it a bit more strongly than that. This class of visa is basically useless.
Well said.
All right. Simply because the timelines. Now, yes, the Department of Labor is better than it was about a year ago, 2 years ago. But if let's say for argument's sake we got 100 applications, we might do one general of the 100 and rather tell people don't bother because the issue of the job description. If we're not living in the 1950s where your job is so simple, so especially in the more technical areas, your job description is quite specific and you're looking for a specific type of person, and they got this very basic database that really doesn't really work. Okay, so what tends to happen is you apply, you go through this process of an inspection in situ. They try and interview your employees and pick up whether you are compliant with all the other laws. But the problem is they won't tell you what the answer is. They actually go off and they'll only tell Home Affairs. So you only find out that your application to Labour has been refused 4 months later when the individual arrives at the embassy and then applies, and only then he's told, oh, sorry, Labour didn't accept the company's request. So that really doesn't work.
And let's face it here, Michael, word of mouth travels as well. And when you play South Africa in terms of competitiveness, Ralph, you brought it up earlier in the World Economic Forum's rankings, we really need to start placing ourselves right at the front of the class to attract the best skills in order to grow this economy. And it looks like, Michael, all of these obstacles and options that we've discussed seem to indicate we have something of a crisis when it comes to skills immigration.
Absolutely, Michael. Look, there are some positives in the pipeline. I know that the Department of Home Affairs, they're investigating the issue of potentially e-visas. We've recently had a directive where a 10-year multiple entry visa has been introduced for African countries, limited to 90-day travel at a time. But it's a question of whether this is too little too late or whether the current system is the one that we're stuck with for a considerable amount of time, because the wheels of the Department of Home Affairs might not turn as quickly as what we would like them to. And the fact of the matter is that we're in an economic crunch now, and we really need to deal with this now. So, yes, I think that there's some light at the end of the tunnel, but it has to happen.
Well, let's hope perhaps that one-stop shop announced by the president at Davos, or just before he left for Davos, actually becomes a reality, so we can cut through some of the bureaucratic red tape that we've created here, Ralph. And just as I round off here, I mean, if my company is busy with a big project at the moment, we're hitting a snag, we need a real expert desperately, but not in 3 months, as we've been hearing, rather at the end of this week, say, to ensure that we don't stop work on site. Does this mean I can't get a U.S. engineering specialist from Detroit to fly down and rescue us? I mean, do I absolutely have no other alternative?
I mean, we pretty much exhausted the catalog, except for, you know, Michael touched briefly on it earlier on with a corporate visa, which is a very complicated, long winded visa to get, because it's issued for an employer with an ease to bring other people in. We find, you know, a way around it, especially in this task that you're saying, that we're using actually a tourist visa to bring them down. It doesn't say, you know, he comes here as a tourist and, you know, secretly works. There's actually a provision in the Act that allows for a tourist visa to be attached with an allowance to work for the same condition, 90 days, you know, and you have to go back. They never really gave it a name. We refer to it as a Section 11-2 visa, because it is, in essence, a tourist visa. But, I mean, you can get that basically within 3-4 days if you prepare it right. You can fly, you can come, commission your machine, fix your problems, you know, stay here. 90 days is usually enough for an emergency kind of scenario, and then you can go. Not the ideal situation, but, I mean, as a as you said earlier, not without hope. There is a solution for everything.
Desperate times call for desperate measures sometimes, and one hopes that certain loopholes aren't closed once they become discovered. And it is a bit of a ripe old mess we seem to find ourselves in as a country. Always the own goals, which does really frustrate one. But thanks to all of my guests tonight, a very enlightening conversation around skills and immigration law. Ralph Oertner, CEO of InterSA Group, Michael Yates, Head of Immigration at Cliffdecker Hoffmeyer, and Lino De Ponte, Director at Tax and Legal at Deloitte's Johannesburg office. Tomorrow night, we're going to have a look